Adam Lapp.
The best part of waking up, it's the doo-wop, doo-wop in all I do. The mountain goat aroma, always coming through.
Always coming through.
Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop ditty. Oh, one more cup and it's a hoo-wop, shoo-wop for me. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
On this relatively warm Tuesday morning, December 19th, Folgers, or whatever the favorite brand of coffee or beverage may be, in your cup, sounds like a good idea. I'm definitely drinking a few sips as we speak. Adam Lepp here. Good morning. It's a few minutes after 10 in the a.m. And that means that it's time for a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Dr. Ronald L. Fineman joins me live from Boca Raton, Florida, very shortly to discuss the political and news events of the day. Net neutrality, of course, being one of the issues that I'm passionate about. Nick and I discussed that in detail last hour. Hopefully enjoyed the discussion. Of course, pertinent presidential ponderings. President Donald, as I call him, always a major topic when the two of us get together on the radio or over Facebook Messenger or over the phone or whatever method of communication may be used at the time. And I'm sure today will be a lively discussion, like it tends to be. Coming up after the noon features, it is now with Scott Spears. He'll have some more celebrity guests for your enjoyment. Coming up after the 2 p.m. features, an encore of yesterday's debut of the Rick Rance radio show. So great programming all day long here on The Talking Place. Before we patch in Dr. Fineman, radio talk for you essentially means I'm going to call him and we shall shoot the breeze for a bit. Please stand, take a knee. Use the restroom. Do whatever you feel is appropriate for our national anthem.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, came through the night, that our flag was still there.
Once again, pleased to be joined by our resident political commentator and historical guru from Boca Raton, Florida. It is Dr. Ronald L. Fineman. And how are things going today, Ron?
Things are going fine. Thank you so much for inviting me once again, Adam.
Something's a little different today, Ron. Let me try to... Oh, you sound a little bit older, just a little tiny bit older. Is there a reason why you sound a little bit older today?
Well, 2 days ago on Sunday, I reached a new number, which I think you know, but I'm not going to...
You turned 60, as I believe, right?
But I'm not younger. I'm older. We all are older. And, of course, when the year begins next in 2 weeks or 10 days, we'll all be older, at least officially, that if we died in the year 18, even if our birthday is December 31st, everybody thinks we're the age that includes the year 18. no matter what day your birthday is. So we don't get older on January 1st.
Okay, well, you know, I don't get older, I get better, and you certainly get better, and we enjoy our conversations here at The Talking Place, and
yes,
always a wisecrack,
yes,
or a surprise or two, but that's part of the fun. Now, normally during Christmas, Kwanzaa-kiss, whatever you want to call this time of the year, news slows down. But honestly, it seems like news has sped up. This is probably the busiest December in news in my lifetime. And my lifetime, as we mentioned, has gotten to be a larger number every single day. We have the Mueller investigations. We have some the tragic wildfires. We have the train derailment. We had the evacuation at the airport in Atlanta, and many,
never a dull moment.
Right, and many news stories from all directions. And of course, we always discuss the President Donald and his shenanigans, and we'll of course be doing that very soon. But I wanted to go back to a recent election, and of course, John McCain has been in the news quite a bit, and he almost became president, and his running mate, Sarah Palin, well, she is in the news once again. It's kind of more her family than Sarah herself. Now, obviously, Sarah Palin generated a bit of controversy. She, although attractive and an interesting person with good ambition, probably wasn't exactly the vice presidential candidate with the highest IQ in history. Most people, even her supporters, probably would agree with that. But there was an unfortunate incident that I just found out about regarding her family. Her husband Todd and their son Track got into a physical, rather bloody physical dispute this past weekend. And Track, who's 28 years old, was arrested on three charges, including assaulting Sarah Palin's husband, and Track's father, Todd Palin. Track was arrested.
That's shocking. It really is.
First-degree burglary, fourth-degree assault, and fourth-degree criminal mischief. Apparently, Sarah Palin said her son was freaking out and was on some type of medication. Track Palin said he had a few beers. It's not the first arrest related to domestic violence. Track was arrested early 2016 and charged with domestic violence assault involving a female. Sarah Palin attributed her son's actions in 2016 to his time serving overseas. Now, as I mentioned, Ron, neither of us are exactly fan club members of Sarah Palin, but we admire her drive, and I think she had a nice family. And there are things about her that might have been attractive, but if she would be qualified for vice president, that's probably a different matter. When you heard this, Ron, was this kind of shocking? Would we expect that from the Palin family? They just didn't seem like the types that would get into altercations like this.
I don't know. I'm not as, you know, I would not give them as much credit as you do as a family. I always thought the family was pretty unattractive. I'm not sure about looks, but I never thought of them as being a typical American family. I just don't have that high regard for the family.
It seems like now with the
state with Sarah, honestly,
right,
because to say living with Sarah would be a nightmare, in my opinion. And their children, you know, I think were in a way spoiled by the fame that their mother got, and I think they often have felt entitlement that they are entitled to, you know, to different treatment because of that. And that's not the case,
right? Certainly, as we know, fame can change people. We've talked about athletes and using steroids and political candidates and their families. You just never know what might occur. And this was kind of sad, though. Hopefully, they
it
can
is sad, but it's also shocking that someone
right.
would attack his father and bloody him. I mean, it's one thing to give him a punch or two, but to be that serious, wow, I think he's going to have jail time.
Yeah, I would say, and he probably does deserve it, especially if it was some drug involved. Of course, the Trump family is constantly in the news, and for multiple reasons. It just seemed, and let me know what you think, Ron, because, again, you've studied every president since you've been alive and studied presidents from before your own time. Does it seem like presidential families have gotten to be more in the news and more involved in the runnings of this country than they were, you know, 25, 50 years ago? And is it because of social media and the easy way to get information disseminated that we can find out almost?
I think that the Trump family is very much involved, and I wrote an article on History News Network about how I think their involvement in government, however, is detrimental and is going to make them look bad. But, you know, other families where there were problems in the family, like Roger Clinton had a drug conviction, the half-brother of Bill Clinton, and Billy Carter was an alcoholic, and Sam Houston Johnson, Lyndon Johnson's brother, was also an alcoholic, and Neil Bush was involved in business, you know, ventures that were, you know, like Neil Bush, the son of George H.W., the brother of George W., was sort of like a person who was involved in all kinds of financial manipulation. So, but the thing is, they were not in government. But now we have Ivanka in government.
And, of course.
Also her husband, Jared Kushner, who seems like he's in real trouble. And Donald Jr., not officially in government, but involved in the campaign and now being investigated for that meeting with the Russian, with the Russians back in June 2016. So I think that they are going to end up being part of this whole criminal situation that's being investigated, and that's worse than having a brother or whatever who's an alcoholic.
So, with
I do think it's bad, but in the past we had the Roosevelts. There were a few different Roosevelts, Franklin Roosevelt's sons, who ended up in the House of Representatives, and we had others, like James Garfield's son, who was Secretary of the Interior, and we had the son-in-law of Teddy Roosevelt, Nicholas Longworth, who was Speaker of the House. So, I mean, we had people who, if they were involved in government or became noticed, they were more positive forces. But lately, we've been having more negative forces. Maybe that's part of the whole problem of American families. Maybe they're just reflecting American family life, that it's not the same as it used to be.
Certainly, there have been some changes, I would agree. And, of course, the advent of social media, the ability to pull up a website and find out news, not just wait for the paper boy to deliver the paper at 6 a.m., this I need it now mentality, which in many ways is good. You want to know news when it happens. That's made everything kind of fast forward in some ways. And sometimes it isn't necessarily good because people are quick to judge, and this conflict goes out in the spotlight immediately. And I think we understand that when you elect a president, you also get the family, but we want to think of the family as being a good thing. And especially that I know Sarah Palin is a past candidate, but she's young. She's still very visible. The story was kind of shocking. And all the stuff going on with the Trump family and his son, his son-in-law, and Ivanka constantly making comments, it certainly changed the landscape of the presidency.
And not for the better, I don't think.
Yeah, and again, it's just the way that American government has evolved. Speaking with Dr. Ronald L. Fineman, a regular commentator here on my show, and he was, in fact, on Scott's show last week, so he's regularly on the Talking Place WWGH discussing all the interesting political tidbits of the day. And as I said, this is, I think in my lifetime, is probably the busiest December for news that I can remember. Ron, you're just a little teeny bit older than I am. Do you remember a December with more news?
Just a teeny.
Yeah. Do you remember in your lifetime a December with more news than 2017?
That's an interesting question. I'd have to probably spend a little time thinking about it. I would certainly say this is a very busy year, but actually, I think if you look back, I don't think it's specifically that December was, but basically with the modern news media and so many sources, I think even news that's not important gets noticed. You know, there's a lot of junk news out there that's not really significant, but there's always something being reported because news is a real competitive business now, more than it ever was.
Right. So it's not just the quantity of news, it's the quality. We're hearing things that maybe we could do without, but some of the stuff is important. And as I said, a lot of it is unfortunate. The wildfires, the power outage at the Atlanta airport, which is the busiest airport in the world. Many events going on. And again, the weather is always in the news. It was a busy year for hurricanes. Ron, you publish a blog called theprogressiveprofessor.com and taking a look at a recent article. And this is quite interesting because we tend to believe that the more prosperous suburbs tend to be more Republican. But we're seeing a change.
Historically, they have been since World War II, yes.
Right, we're
but
seeing
now
a
it's change
to change.
Least, yeah.
in the landscape. And honestly, here in Ohio, I think I can notice that myself. The white, educated Republican suburbs are moving toward the Democratic Party in the age of President Trump. And, of course, the recent results in Alabama That was certainly startling. I wasn't expecting the outcome that occurred. Of course, I would agree that it was a preferable outcome, but it was a bit of a surprise. So just when you thought you got it figured out, you never quite know.
Also, Virginia in November, another example.
So there are changes. And again, I think the election of the current president, that was a surprise. You really can't take anything for granted until the election results are counted. Despite all the technology and all the polls and all these prognosticators,
and polls are not accurate a lot of the time. You discover the polls are not necessarily the answer. You can't believe polls anymore.
You don't know. And as I remind our listeners, your vote does count. If you think you shouldn't vote because your one vote doesn't matter, you're wrong. Get out there and vote, because you never quite know what might happen. In your blog, Ron, you wrote, the Democrats need to pursue this rather than just attack Donald Trump. Again, pursue the fact that the white upper middle class suburbs, and again, that applies here. I think Columbus and Cincinnati, I think, are two very good examples. Instead of attacking Donald Trump, let's look at it from a positive perspective, a chance to swing votes where people may change their mind, may not be quite sure. Maybe they don't like the current people in office. They need to emphasize job growth, education, health care, and the dangers to our national security represented by the bromance between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. They need to show that they have a positive program of change and rally people around the harm to our environment and consumer protection by the Trump presidency, as well as the harm done with unqualified judicial appointments and in our diplomacy with other nations. Now, with these gubernatorial races that you and others are talking about in 11 months from now, how are things possibly going to change, and how is that going to affect, assuming Donald Trump is still in office? Now, you and I believe he will not be in office a year from today, but let's say that he is. With these gubernatorial elections coming up in November of next year, and let's say Donald Trump is still sitting in the Oval Office, what kind of an effect is there going to have on that?
Well, hopefully it will lead to many states turning over to the Democrats, including the state legislatures, and that's important not just for 18, but beyond, because that's going to affect reapportionment of seats after the census of 2020, which will take place on April 1st, 2020, and will therefore reorganize state legislative seats and also the House of Representatives for the next decade, and will also add electoral votes to states that are growing, like Florida and, you know, California. So it's going to really matter as far as setting up the future of the next decade. One of the reasons the Republicans did so well is they did well in 2008 and 10, and therefore took control of so many legislatures and governorships. But hopefully that can be turned around.
Now, how does the proportion of Democratic and Republican or possibly independent governors affect what goes on in the White House? That would be state politics. But what's the effect of that on the national political landscape?
Well, because one thing is that if you get a lot more governors, often governors are considered the best presidential candidates, although we also elect senators, but we've elected more governors than senators in our history. And the thing is, the Democrats don't have much to offer in governorships as far as presidential candidates.
Right. We've had
Gavin Newsom in California, who hopefully will be elected, and he could definitely be a possible presidential candidate in 2020. And there's the possibility I'm trying to remember his name, the guy who's running in Ohio to replace Kasich, the guy who was the head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Richard Cordray.
Richard Cordray, he's an interesting guy. I'm not saying he's going to run for president, but if he's Ohio governor, it's something that's certainly a possibility in paper, because he's from a major state. And there are other cases. So I think the Democrats could have a lot more of the big states, and that's where most often we would look for possible presidential material. And that could affect, of course, legislation and what is done at the state level, and have an effect on Congress in 20.
You are listening to a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor, speaking with Dr. Ronald Fineman about some of the current events and presidential and political ponderings in the world.
Yeah, may I intervene to answer about the December issue that you brought up earlier? I've been thinking about it as we've been talking about another December quite like this. Well, we got attacked at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii on December 7th. That made December a very busy news month. We went to war against Germany, Italy, and Japan, and of course the shock of the Pearl Harbor attack. So that's at least one example. As long ago, 66 years ago, when December was a very crucial month.
Right, and that was, I think it was in your lifetime, Ron. I'm not quite sure, but it was not in my lifetime.
No, it was not. It was 3 years before.
Now, we did speak about...
I'm giving away my age here.
Yeah, about governors, and that's been interesting, because it seems, yeah, I mean, I'm thinking almost all of the recent presidents and presidential candidates we talked about, and vice presidential candidates, we talked about Sarah Palin. She was the governor of Alaska. Clinton, Carter, Reagan, George W. Bush, many of them were governors.
It's only been three senators directly elected since the 20th century. Only Warren G. Harding from your hometown of Marion, John F. Kennedy, and Barack Obama, the only senators elected directly. There were others who were senators like Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon, Harry Truman, but they didn't go directly from that to the White House. Only Harding in 1920, Kennedy in 60, and both were people who came from other positions that were elevated.
Right, and the governors have been from states of different sizes. Certainly, Texas and California; those are two of your biggies. But Clinton was governor of Arkansas, not one of the largest states. Carter, governor of Georgia,
state, Georgia, but not as big as some others.
Right,
yes.
Kind of a middle of the road state. Being governor, and we talk about Georgia, not the largest state in the world, but it has a major city with the world's busiest airport, Atlanta. So. Certainly, Carter, with his experience in the family business and governor of Georgia, that certainly helped him as he successfully pursued the presidency. George W. Bush was a executive and a majority owner of the Texas Rangers and, of course, a governor. Plus, of course, his father was president, so he had some good qualifications. And certainly, we take a look at what the qualifications are to be president. The current president, although a longtime businessman, had no political elected experience at all. So, again, you never quite know. Just when you think you figured it out, politics and elections can really throw you a curve. And that's probably why we never run out of topics to talk about here on this show.
Also have executive experience, which is an advantage over being a senator, and unless someone's been both. Like, you know, Kasich has been in the House of Representatives, which is not the Senate, but it's still legislature, and he's been governor. That's what makes him really especially qualified, because he's been at both ends. But if you're only a senator, you don't really have executive experience, you have legislative experience, while governors have what supposedly the president's going to be, an executive.
And Kasich was a budget director, too, and a news commentator, so... other things he did, which obviously make him qualified, and I don't think we've heard the end of him yet. We'll find out. He has tried many times, not been successful, but you never quite know. Just when you think it's time to give up, the tables get turned, and sometimes the voting levers or the voting touch screens, in this case, turn into a direction that's favorable to you. Matthew Peterson has been in the news as a district court nominee for the president, but a lot of videos that were circulating online showed that he doesn't have a lot of judicial knowledge and probably isn't qualified for a high court position. And now he is no longer in that running. He withdrew his nomination. And this obviously...
I think that was smart.
Right. Obviously, yeah. Ron, this has been a growing problem that... Donald Trump, again, love him or hate him, I think the bigger problem is the people in his cabinet. And we talked about net neutrality. We'll talk about that a little bit this show, that his net neutrality guy was attorney for Verizon, a major conflict of interest. And Betsy, the education secretary, right, the Treasury secretary, and this gentleman here, Matthew Peterson. So there are people that he has nominated that maybe didn't think enough about before putting them in these positions, or there is a definite conflict of interest. Again, the FCC guy certainly being one of the big ones, and one that's near and dear to me, being in the telecom business and an internet consultant and being a broadcaster. So is that really one of the biggest issues we have with Trump, Ron? I know there are many, but all these cabinet appointments, and do you think maybe he's learned his lesson about whom to nominate, or is he just a little too stubborn?
No, he is not. He never will. He picks corrupt people, incompetent people, arrogant people. As I think I've said before, there's very few people around him that I really respect. I respect Nikki Haley, the UN ambassador. I respect James Mattis, the Secretary of Defense. There aren't too many others, you know, that I could think of. But the thing is, with the judicial appointments, their life, even the FCC, is not forever. It's, you know, period of years. And of course, if you're appointed to a cabinet position, you can be let go anytime, and usually gone after 4 or up to 8 years if a president stays. But the judicial is lifetime. That is really the worst thing of all, because you cannot get rid of these people unless they do an impeachable act. There are very few judges that have ever been removed, and so it's really the most damaging thing of all is the judicial nominees.
So maybe Matthew Peterson, his ethics definitely showed that although he appreciated the nomination, he just wasn't qualified. And maybe just
same with Brett Talley, was another guy who was nominated, and he backed out. So a couple have, but I understand a couple of people have been approved that may have some judicial knowledge, but were not approved by the American Bar Association, because he doesn't care, Trump, about what the American Bar Association wants. He does what the right-wing Federalist Society wants him to do, and picks the most right-wing people like Neil Gorsuch. And the ABA has often said they're unqualified or poorly qualified, but he's not interested in getting the ABA's backing, and all earlier presidents always went through the ABA. So we're having among the worst judicial appointments ever right now. Even though some have backed out, others are staying, and they're going to be affecting us 30, 40, who knows, 50 years. I want to point out I read about a judge on the district court level. I came across somebody who had died in 2000. I think 14 it was, and he had been a district judge appointed by John F. Kennedy. Imagine that, more than 50 years, and he was 104, and he was fine, but he finally died, the oldest judge ever. But the point is, in theory, and Neil Gorsuch, in theory, could stay till he's 100 if he stays in good health. I'm not going to probably be that long, but it's scary that we have people staying 30, 40, 50 years, who in many cases should not be part of the court system.
Probably the two big stories that have been all over the news and you and I have talked about would be the tax adjustment, let's call it the change in the tax system, and the net neutrality. Let's talk about the tax changes first, Ron. Now, you are convinced that they will only benefit the most wealthy people, and for the everyday working Joe, it's not going to be a beneficial change.
Well, really, I'm disturbed that Susan Collins, after all this, is voting for it, apparently, for what she said a couple of days ago, and that Jeff Flake is voting for it. McCain is not going to be there, but he would vote for it, but he's unfortunately back in Arizona recovering from treatment for cancer, and hopefully he'll be all right. But it doesn't matter as long as they get 50 votes, so even without it, they have 51. But it is disturbing to me, because this is a bill that Paul Ryan wants so badly to be passed, because he's already made clear 2018 is the year of the attack on entire care of Social Security, and that's why being nice about it on the air, that people say he's having a wet dream, and you can think of something else to say about that that's not as nice, that this is his thrill to be the Ayn Rand libertarian, destroying the whole Social Security system and Medicare and Medicaid, and really declaring war on the New Deal of FDR and the Great Society of Lyndon Johnson, and trying to take us back to the 1920s before any of these things occurred. And at the same time, Trump is trying to get rid of all environmental laws in 1960 and since. So, I mean, this is disastrous, what's going on. It's not something that's going to be reversed by 2021 or 2022 with a Democratic president. This is long-term damage.
Before we discuss the net neutrality, something which, if you've read my Facebook, you know that I feel very strongly about this. And out of lack of a better term, I'm just disgusted right now.
Ron,
you're of the Jewish faith, and so happy Hanukkah. It is Hanukkah time.
Thank you.
And this has always been a
Merry Christmas to you and all the people listening.
And this has always been a controversial thing. Are you offended if people say Merry Christmas, even to you, not someone who celebrates? Do we need to lighten up a little bit?
Things to worry about. I even say Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and Happy Holidays. I say it all. For Donald Trump to make a big deal about what it says, it does not matter. It really doesn't. If you don't say it or you do say it, I don't take offense at it. It's ridiculous that people make a big deal about a war on Christmas. There's no war on Christmas. That is an empty-headed person saying that. And there's too many people like that make religion the be-all and end-all. You got to promote their religion. But this is a country of all religions, and we don't want indeed religion and government, and that's what worries me about Mike Pence. He's too much of a religious extremist.
So I guess almost interestingly, it's maybe the more left-wing people who want to go ahead and say, well, respect people's beliefs, but we're saying, well, just lighten up a little bit. Just because you say Merry Christmas doesn't even imply that you celebrate it or the person you're wishing a Merry Christmas to celebrates it. And you know me, I'm always the wise guy, so I say the Christmas Kwanzaa or whatever that word is. Seinfeld, of course, had Festivus. So yeah, I mean, I'm not a religious person, but it's not a big deal to me. And
you know, I want to tell you, I'm not in the same sense as you, a religious person. I respect also, but I say being religious is not going to church or synagogue or mosque. It's how you live your life every day, how you treat people around you, and not just people that have power and wealth, but the so-called, quote, little people, the people, the waiters, the maids, the people that do jobs that every day are mistreated by people of wealth and power. That, to me, if you're religious, you would not do that. So you think that Christians are good Jews or whatever, and really are not. I think that just promoting their faith is the whole story, but that is not what I think being religious really means.
And again, there is hypocrisy, and it's been a source of conflict for a long time. I don't think the conflict is going to go away, but honestly, lighten up. Love your fellow man and woman, and it really does tend to work wonders. As I say, I mean, wishing me a Merry Christmas isn't offensive. I guess people might say, well, what are you doing for Christmas? And I might say, well, not really anything, because I don't celebrate, but it doesn't offend me. And somebody will say, well, I'm sorry. Well, it's okay. It is a holiday on the calendar. It affects my business because it tends to be kind of a quiet, laid-back day, so it's not really a big deal. I think there are 1,001 more problems in the world to worry about than getting your feelings hurt because someone wishes you a happy holiday that you may celebrate or you may not recognize in the same way as someone else. And
also, we should not be attacking the Islamic faith just because we're not Muslims. We have to have respect for those who live in this country who are Muslims or Hindus or whatever, and not think they're Christian. It is not. We are a nation of all nations, of all religions, all ethnicities, all races, and we should respect everybody for who they are.
And just one more note on this political correctness issue and words. There was something I saw on Facebook, Ron, about, I believe it was one of the colleges in Ohio, no longer is going to use the term freshman because it is taken as possibly sexist, but instead will be saying first year student. Of course, I joked and said, what about fresh person? And the person who posted it said that, well, maybe the person isn't clean, so they really aren't fresh. Another person said, well, this is ridiculous. What do you think, Ron? Does a word like freshman, is that inherently sexist? Should we say first-year student, or should we kind of like be like the holiday terminology and just lighten up? What's your perspective on that?
I think it's ridiculous. But what university is this, a public or private?
I believe it's a public school, public college in Ohio. Well, I forget which one, but one of my Facebook friends from northeastern end of the Columbus suburbs posted it.
I think it's ridiculous. I don't see any problem with the word freshman. I know women are not mentioned there, but correct for a ridiculous extent. I don't agree with that. If anybody wants to use that term, first-year student, that's fine. But honestly, I don't think there's any trouble with the word freshman. I think we can go too far to the extreme, and I think that is a waste of our energy. We have better things to worry about and think about.
Yeah, bigger fish to fry may sound like a cop-out, but honestly, that's often the way that it is. Ron, you've been pretty busy.
Anyway, I bring in, because you bring in about this issue of men and women, there's this story now the last day or two about some senators like Joe Manchin, who is, of course, much more conservative than most Democrats, has said Al Franken should not resign. He should go through an ethics committee hearing and then maybe consider it, but that he should not be railroaded out. And actually, I said that on my blog. Maybe after an investigation, yes, but he should not be resigning. So the talk is some senators are saying he should withdraw his resignation, go through the ethics investigation, and then we see what happens, and not allow these women senators, a whole group of them, very disappointed that they really ganged up and bullied him, I think. And that's why I'm not so happy with Kirsten Gillibrand, because I think she went too far, too quickly, and I just think there's such a thing as having respect for fellow senators and letting them have their day in court, as we call it, before we take action, or before action is taken.
I would agree. You don't want to jump. Don't want to put the cart before the horse. And sometimes we need to just shake hands and take a chill pill. It does work wonders. Now, once
I think Kristen Gillibrand has gotten a lot of press, but I think it may backfire on her as far as her interest in running for president. It certainly turns me off to her and makes me less likely to want to really see her succeed, because I don't think she's the best woman candidate anyway, and I'm not sure what she has done, and even the other women who have joined in, I think it's a mistake, and I think they should back off. That's, but I don't know if it's going to happen, but I would say Al Franken should be given a chance to prove his innocence if he can.
You and I talked
hurriedly and suddenly.
You and I talked on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show recently about the net neutrality. And unfortunately, net neutrality may very well be something that you see only in the history books. Now, the FCC FCC commissioner, again, Mr. Pai, has a major conflict of interest, having been associated with Verizon. 5 out of 6 people, 83-84%, from what I'm seeing, support net neutrality. It's not at all a partisan issue as I see it. I don't see anything Democrat or Republican. Now, I agree, Ron, that we don't need more government regulations. The problem is that I would trust 100 used car dealers before I trust one telecom company. It is one of the sleaziest businesses around.
That's a good way to put it.
Too many mergers. Everybody's had a problem. Even though my telecom company is pretty good, they still are lucky to get a C- as far as I'm concerned. And some of these companies get an F. And they will run rampant. And they will do whatever they can to gouge prices, be unfair to consumers, and make using the internet something that will make you wish for the old newspaper and a chat around grandma's breakfast table, as far as I'm concerned.
I must say that I'm concerned with this change in rules that maybe, I'm not saying for sure, but maybe there'll be some telecom company will say, this progressive professor website, maybe we shouldn't make it as easily accessible because he's more critical of business, etc. Who knows? It could actually hurt the traffic to my website. I hope not.
No, and there are many things that can happen, and this isn't as far-fetched as it might sound. I was talking to a very conservative commentator, first name is Mike, that you and I both know online, and he mentioned he is in favor of this removal of net neutrality. And I mentioned that he's a frequent user of ride-sharing services. And what I mentioned was that this would give his telecom company a right to say, if you download the Uber or Lyft app, it's going to cost you $100. And one reason why they might do that is there could be a competing rideshare company, possibly one owned or some way managed or directed by your telecom company that they'd prefer that you use. Now, am I correct, Ron? And neither of us is a lawyer, but I don't think you need a law degree from Harvard to figure this one out. Am I correct in that your telecom company or mine can say, well, if you download Uber or Lyft, or even if you use it, even if you downloaded it last year, we're going to charge you $100 to keep it to access it, because we want you to use our service instead.
I still believe we need regulation, yes.
Right, and with net neutrality, it's like somewhat analogous to using gasoline or using electricity. You buy it, and what you use it for is your business. All you have to do is pay your bill. You are not charged a different price for gasoline based upon where you drive. If the gas station does not agree with the places that you drive to, maybe they don't like the kind of food that you're driving to, take your date to a restaurant, or they don't like the part of town you live in where you drive your car to, they don't charge you anymore for gasoline. And that's why we need net neutrality, because that's the analogy. You pay for internet access. Granted, it's generally unlimited, but again, it's with that price structure, you're getting bandwidth, and they kind of average it out based upon what a particular person might be using it for, whereas your cell phone might be unlimited, or in some way there's a meter, so to speak, on the phone. But what you use the bandwidth for, what I'm saying in a convoluted way of sorts, it really isn't their business. All you really have to do is pay your bill. But is that an actual problem, Ron, where the companies might go ahead and say, well, you pay extra to use this app or use this website because we don't like this. We don't like Uber or Lyft. We don't like the progressive professor. We don't like
Fox. I don't know for sure, but I think it could happen. And right. I think basically old little guy, not mean only men, the little guy is the one who could be zapped, while the bigger, more prominent authorities will almost have favoritism. I think it helps promote the big business idea over the small business, or the big media site over the small media site, like mine is a media site. And I think it is very dangerous. It's going to stifle competition, I think.
And I mentioned to our the conservative commentator, Mike, that we know, I told them, well, they could go ahead and start a different rideshare service, or decide, well, we don't want you to use Uber or Lyft, use this, or just call a regular taxi, because they advertise on our website, and they could very well do that. And when I said that, he said, well, I might reconsider my position. So I guess little old me can sometimes have an influence on people. Ron, are there any arguments?
I'm glad, because he needs to be updated, because he has a lot of... I think are really quite crazy, actually. I'm glad to hear that he's reconsidering after what you told him.
Right. And we may be talking about it on a future show, but I wanted to bring that up because some of this is just so obvious. And again, a PhD from Harvard is not necessary. Just being a regular intelligent person, a business owner, a broadcaster, that's more than enough. Bottom line is, Ron, are there any, in your opinion, arguments against net neutrality? Other than the fact that we maybe have too much regulation, but then I say, I trust 100 used car dealers before I trust a telecom company. I mean, are there any arguments against net neutrality?
I don't think there are any. I think it should always be that way. But, of course, I have my progressive view, and I guess conservatives would say the opposite. It's just like on radio. On radio, so many of the stations are dominated by right-wing talk. It's very hard for liberals to get an even chance. And, you know, one thing about WGH is it really gives all viewpoints and does not just favor the right wing, and that's why I applaud your station.
Yeah, we want to give all perspectives. We're not here to say we're right, you're wrong. But I do feel very strongly about this, and it also affects broadcasting, because my provider could say, well, I don't like you using TuneIn to listen to the station. I don't like you accessing the radio station's computers to control your show, to upload announcements, to put on the weather and news. We're going to charge you for that. And they can do that, and that is very uncool as far as I am concerned. But before we leave today, Ron, am I being a little too harsh? Are you like me in that you don't trust telecom companies, or am I being a little too strong
I agree with you
about
completely.
My opinion?
I definitely don't think you can trust telecom companies. I think you have to realize the corporate world is monopolizing more than ever, and I think they're trying to monopolize the internet as well, and I definitely agree with you 100%.
Okay, well, I'm glad we agree, and I do invite my listeners, just because I say something doesn't mean that it's right. We'd like to hear what you have to say. Adam at WWGH1071.com. Dr. Ronald Fineman, thank you very much for being on the show. We appreciate your viewpoints. Good discussion. Some of the topics, again, are not exactly positive ones, but I think we need to address them and invite dialogue. And that's what talk radio is all about.
Future interviews again. Thanks.
Have a great day. Thank you very much for being on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam.